damage in my transmission. Battle damage, probably. I figure half the planet must have heard what I said to him.
And finally, Leia understood. And of course, none of them wanted Phalia to grab all the glory for himself, she said, smiling tightly. Have I told you lately that you're brilliant?
No. Well, that's okay. You've been busy. Are we ready?
We're ready, Leia said, nodding. General Calrissian, your fleet awaits your orders. For a long minute, the bridge seemed to have become suspended in time and space. Moff Deesra stood stiffly where he was, a couple of steps away from the two female civilians, his face contorted with disbelief and hatred, and perhaps even a touch of fear. Major Tierce had stopped too, halfway along the command walkway, looking back at Pelion with an unreadable expression on his face. Captain Dorja and the officers at the side consoles were staring back at him, and even the men down in the crew pits had somehow sensed something was wrong and had dropped their voices to whispers.
Admiral Pelion,
Thrawn's smoothly modulated voice broke the silence. Pelion had rather expected him to be the first to speak.
Welcome aboard the Relentless. I'm afraid we somehow missed the news of your arrival.
As I somehow missed the news of your return,
Pelion countered. Like Tierce, the expression behind those glowing red eyes was unreadable.
An unintentional oversight, I'm sure.
Are you questioning the Grand Admiral's decisions?
Deesra snarled.
On the contrary,
Pelion assured him.
I've always had the highest respect for Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Then why sneak aboard this way?
Tierce demanded, coming back along the walkway and stopping next to the younger of the two women.
Do you have something to hide? Or some dark errand of treason to carry out?
Deliberately, Pelion shifted his gaze from the Major to the women beside him.
I'm afraid we haven't been properly introduced,
he said, bowing his head in greeting.
I'm Admiral Pelion, Supreme Commander of Imperial Forces.
Not anymore, you're not, Deesra growled. Grand Admiral Thrawn is in command now.
Really?
Pelion said, eyeing him coolly.
I wasn't informed of any change of command. Another unintentional oversight.
Take care, Admiral,
Tierce warned softly.
You're treading on very slippery ground here.
Pelion shook his head.
You're mistaken, Major,
he said.
Whatever slippery ground exists here is beneath your feet.
He looked at Deesra.
And yours, Your Excellency.
He shifted his gaze to the man in the white Grand Admiral's uniform.
And yours, Flim.
Deesra's head jerked, as if he'd touched a live power cable.
What are you talking about?
He demanded. But there was a new tremor in the Moff's voice, and his eyes were those of a man seeing sudden destruction coming inexorably toward him.
I'm talking about an accomplished con artist,
Pelion said, raising his voice so that the entire bridge could hear.
I have his rather colorful life history right here,
he added, pulling a data card from his tunic and holding it up.
Including detailed holos and a complete genetic profile.
He looked across at Flim.
Would you care to accompany me to the nearest medical station for an examination?
But we checked his genetic profile, sir,
Captain Dorja objected, stepping away from the side console where he'd been standing.
Captain Nalgol took a skin sample and compared it to Thrawn's official records.
Records can be altered, Captain,
Pelion reminded him.
Even official records, if the access codes have been sliced. When we return to Bastion, you can compare the genetic records with those on this data card.
Lies can even more easily be created on data cards,
Tierce said. His voice was calm, but there was an edge of something vicious beneath it.
This is nothing but a last pitiful attempt to undermine Grand Admiral Thrawn's authority, driven by Pelion's jealous fear of losing his position and prestige.
He half turned.
You see it, Captain Dorja, don't you?
He called.
Thrawn came to you instead of Pelion. That's what he can't stomach. He came to you and Nalgol and the others, and not to him.
Dorja's eyes met Pelion's, his face tight with confusion.
Admiral, I've always trusted your word and your judgment, he said. But in this case...
There's one other record of interest on this data card,
Pelion said, looking back at Tierce.
Again from the same source. It's the record in life history of a certain Imperial Major Grodin Tierce.
Slowly, Tierce turned back to face him. And this time, there was no mistaking the murder in his eyes.
And what does the record say?
He asked softly.
It says that Major Tierce was one of the finest combat stormtroopers ever to serve the Empire,
Pelion told him.
That his successes raised him to command rank far more quickly than even stormtrooper norm. That at the age of 24, he was selected to serve the Emperor as one of the elite Royal Guard. That his fierce loyalty to Palpatine's new order was second to none.
Pelion lifted his eyebrows slightly.
And that as part of a stormtrooper unit involved in Thrawn's campaign against Generis, he died in combat. 10 years ago.
Once again, the bridge went silent. But this time, it wasn't the silence of surprise. It was the silence of total shock.
You're a clone?
The words had come from Deesra, but the voice was so distorted as to be almost unrecognizable.
You're just a clone?
Slowly, Tierce turned his venomous gaze from Pelion to Deesra. And then, abruptly, he barked out a short, tortured-sounding laugh.
Ha! Just a clone,
he repeated mockingly.
Just a clone? Is that what you said, Deesra? Just a clone? You have no idea.
He looked around the room.
None of you do. I wasn't just a clone. I was something very special. Something special and glorious.
Why don't you tell us what that was?
Pelion invited quietly. Tears spun back to face him.
I was the first of a new breed,
he bit out.
The first of what would have been a class of warlords, the likes of which the galaxy had never seen. Warlords who combined stormtrooper combat strength and loyalty with Thrawn's own tactical genius. We would have led, and we would have conquered, and no one could have stood against us.
He turned around, his movements becoming almost jerky in his agitation.
Don't you see?
He shouted, his eyes darting to each of the officers and crewers staring in fascination or revulsion at him.
Thrawn took Tierce and cloned him, but he put some of himself into the process. He added part of his own tactical genius to the usual flash learning, combining it with Tierce's own mind.
He spun again to face Deesra.
You've seen it, Deesra, whether you know it or not. You've seen it. I was manipulating you from the very start. Don't you see? It was me, right from the minute I maneuvered myself in as your aide. All of those pirate attacks, the Praebird deals, that was me. All me. You never saw it. You never even guessed it. But I was the one making the quiet suggestions and feeding you the right data in the right order to get you to do what I wanted. And all the rest of you have seen it too!
He shouted, spinning around again.
I've been running the tactics here. Not Flim. Not that red-eyed figurehead. Me! It's always been me! And I'm good at it. It's what Thrawn made me to be. I can do this!
His eyes seized on Deesra again.
You talk about the Hand of Thrawn, his last ultimate weapon,
he said, his voice almost pleading.
I can be that Hand of Thrawn. I can be Thrawn himself. I can defeat the New Republic. I know it.
No, Major,
Pelion said.
The war is over.
Tears spun back to face him.
No!
he snarled.
It's not over. Not yet. Not until we've crushed Coruscant. Not until we've had our vengeance against the rebels!
Pelion gazed at him, pity and revulsion swirling together within him.
You don't understand at all,
he said sadly.
Thrawn was never interested in vengeance. His goal was order and stability and the strength that comes of unity and common purpose. And how would you know what Thrawn was interested in?
Tyr sneered.
Do you have part of his mind inside you?
Well, do you?
Pelion sighed.
You say you were the first of these new warlords. Do you know why there weren't any others?
Tyr's eyes seemed to withdraw within him.
He ran out of time, he said.
He died at Bilbringi.
You let him die at Bilbringi!
No.
Pelion lifted the data card slightly.
You were created 2 months before his death. There was plenty of time for him to have made others. The fact is that there weren't any others, because the experiment was a failure.
Impossible,
Tears breathed.
I wasn't a failure. Look at me.
Look at me!
I'm exactly what he wanted.
Pelion shook his head.
What he wanted was a tactically brilliant leader,
he said gently.
What he got was a tactically brilliant stormtrooper. You're not a leader, Major. By your own statement, you're nothing but a manipulator. You have no vision, only a thirst for revenge.
Tyr's eyes darted around the bridge, as if looking for support.
That doesn't matter,
he ground out.
What matters is that I can do the job. I can defeat the rebels. Just give me a little more time.
There is no more time,
Pelion said with quiet finality.
The war is over.
He looked over at Ardiff.
Captain Ardiff, please call a security detachment to the bridge.
He started to turn away, and in that instant, Tyrs exploded into action. The young woman standing beside him was his first victim, doubling over in agony as Tyr swung his fist viciously down and back into her stomach. In the same motion, he plucked away the blaster that had suddenly appeared in her hand, twisting around to fire a shot at the older woman as the younger collapsed to the deck. He twisted back, bringing the blaster to bear on Pelion. There was a flicker of movement at the corner of Pelion's eye, and Tyr jerked back, screaming in rage and pain as his gun hand was slapped to the side, the shot going wide, the blaster itself flying uselessly from his grip to skitter across the deck and down into the starboard crew pit. And from concealment around the side of the archway, behind Pelion, gliding silently across the deck, came Shaeda Dukal. Tyrs didn't even bother to pull out the lacquered Zenji needle now waving bloodily from the back of his gun hand. Screaming incoherently, he hooked his fingers into Predator's claws and charged. Reflexively, Pelion took a step backward. But he needn't have bothered. Shaeda was already there, meeting Tyr's halfway. And in a blurred flurry of hands and arms, it was all over.
Captain Dorja, call a medical team to the bridge,
Pelion ordered, as Shaeda stepped over Tyr's broken body and hurried over to kneel beside the injured woman.
Then order all Imperial forces to cease fire immediately.
Yes, sir,
Dorja said hesitantly.
However,
Flim lifted a blue-skinned hand. What he's trying to find words to say, Admiral, is that they'll expect any such order to come from...
Grand Admiral Thrawn,
he said. His voice had changed subtly, but noticeably. And as Pelion glanced around the bridge, he saw that they finally recognized the truth.
If you'll permit me...
Pelion gestured.
Go ahead.
Flim turned to the comm officer and nodded.
This is Grand Admiral Thrawn,
he called, once again in that exquisitely perfect voice.
All units cease fire. Repeat, cease fire. General Bel Iblis. Please call on your forces to do likewise. Then stand by for a transmission from Admiral Pelion.
He took a deep breath and let it out. And as he did so, the aura of leadership and command subtly fell away from him. He was just a man again. A man in blue makeup and a white uniform. And Grand Admiral Thrawn was once again gone.
"And may I say to you, Admiral,"
he added, as he walked back along the command walkway,
"how relieved I am that you're here. This whole thing has been a nightmare for me. An absolute nightmare."
"Of course," Pelion said gravely. "We'll have to make time later for you to tell me your tale of woe."
Flim half bowed. "I'll look forward to that, sir."
"Yes,"
Pelion said, looking over at Deesra.
"So will I."
Chapter 42.
The loud gushing sound had subsided now to a quiet sloshing as the water continued to creep its slow but steady way up the sides of the room. A sloshing sound that was being rhythmically punctuated by the splashing of chunks of rock as Luke's lightsaber carved a deepening conical pit into the top of the dome.
"I think you're wasting your time,"
Mara said, as the splash from a particularly large chunk echoed through the room.
"There's nothing up there but solid rock."
"I think you're right," Luke conceded, shifting his arm to a new spot around her shoulders and trying to hold her a little closer. Soaked clear through, they were both shivering in the cool, damp air.
"I was hoping we might be able to punch through to the main power generator area. But I guess if we haven't hit it by now, it's not there."
"It's probably 20 meters behind us,"
she said, her teeth chattering slightly.
"We'd never be able to cut through it in time. Are your ears starting to hurt?"
"A little,"
Luke said, reluctantly closing down his lightsaber and calling it back to his hand. Cutting through the ceiling had been his last, best idea.
"The air in here is being compressed. The extra pressure should help slow down the incoming water a little."
"Along with making our eyes go all buggy,"
Mara nodded toward the far wall.
"You suppose there's any chance the top of the room's above the level of the lake? If it is, we might be able to cut our way throughout horizontally."
"And if it isn't, we'd drown ourselves that much sooner,"
Luke pointed out. "Anyway, I really don't think we're high enough."
"I don't think so either,"
Mara agreed regretfully, leaning forward to look past Luke at R2.
"Too bad we lost the data pad. We could have asked R2 to take some sensor readings. We could still ask, of course, but we couldn't understand the answer."
"Wait a minute,"
Luke said, another idea suddenly hitting him.
"What about the passageway where we first came in? We could send R2 there with my lightsaber to enlarge it."
"No good,"
Mara shook her head, the movement sending strands of wet hair slapping gently across Luke's cheek.
"That whole section is solid cortosis ore. I checked it the first time we went through."
Luke grimaced.
"I thought it sounded too easy."
"Isn't it always?"
Mara said, the faint sarcasm sounding odd coming as it did through chattering teeth.
"Too bad we don't have a dark Jedi handy we could kill. Remember that big blast when Sabaoth died?"
"Yes," Luke said mechanically, staring off into space. The insane Jedi clone Jorua's Sabaoth, recruited to fight against the New Republic by Grand Admiral Thrawn. Thrawn. Clone.
"Mara, you told me cortosis ore wasn't structurally very strong. Just how weak is it?"
"It was flaking off under our boots as we walked through the passage,"
she said, throwing him a puzzled look.
"Other than that, I haven't the faintest idea. Why?"
Luke nodded at the vast pool below them.
We've got a lot of water here, and water isn't compressible the way air is. If we could create a hard enough jolt here in this room, the pressure wave should travel all the way down the tunnel to the passageway. If it's powerful enough, maybe we can collapse that whole area.
Sounds great,
Mara agreed.
Just one problem. How exactly do we engineer this massive jolt of yours?
Luke braced himself. We cut through that transperisteel barrier and flood the cloning alcove.
Oh, my stars,
Mara murmured. And even through his mental exhaustion, Luke could feel her ripple of stunned apprehension.
Luke, that's a Braxton Phipps 590 fusion generator in there. You dump water on that, and you're going to have more jolt than you know what to do with.
I know it's risky, Luke said, but I think it's our only chance. Letting go of his grip on her, wincing as his wet clothing shifted against his skin, he stood up.
Wait here. I'll be right back.
She sighed.
No,
she said, standing up beside him and taking hold of his arm.
I'll do it.
Like blazes you will,
Luke growled.
It's my crazy idea. I'll do it.
Okay,
she said, crossing her arms.
Tell me how you do a paparec crosscut.
He blinked.
A what?
A paparec crosscut,
she repeated.
It's a technique for weakening a stressed wall so that it comes down a minute or so after you're safely out of the vicinity. Palpatine taught it to me as part of my sabotage training.
Okay, Luke said. So give me a fast course.
What? Like a fast course in becoming a Jedi?
She countered scornfully.
It's not that easy.
Mara.
Besides,
she added quietly,
when whichever of us goes down pops up again, the other one's going to have to get them back up here out of the way of the blast. I don't think I can lift you that far that fast.
Her lips pressed briefly together.
And frankly, I don't want to sit here and watch myself fail.
Luke glared at her. But she was right. And they both knew it.
This is blackmail, you know.
This is common sense,
she corrected him.
The right person for the job, remember?
She smiled faintly.
Or do you need another lecture on that topic?
Spare me, he said with a sigh, running his fingertips across her cheek.
All right, I'll lift you over there. Be careful, okay?
Don't worry,
she said, taking a deep breath and pulling her lightsaber from her belt.
Ready.
Stretching out to the Force, he lifted her over the railing and across the room to the transperisteel wall. Her mind touched his, her thoughts indicating she was ready, and he lowered her into the water. She took a few more deep breaths, then bent at the waist and ducked her head beneath the surface. A single vertical kick of her legs, and she was gone. Across the ledge, R2 moaned nervously.
She'll be all right,
Luke assured him, gripping the top rail as he stared anxiously at the choppy water. He could feel Mara's thoughts as she maneuvered her way back and forth across the wall, making short, deliberate cuts with her lightsaber. Stretching out harder, he could sense the change in flow against her skin as the water began to seep through the cracks. And if the water level rose high enough in there to reach the generator before she was finished...
Come on, Mara. Come on,
he muttered under his breath.
It's good enough. Let's go.
He felt her negative thought. The wall wasn't yet shredded to her satisfaction. Luke pressed back his impatience and fear, the faces of Callista and Gariel hovering before him. Only a week ago, he told himself firmly that he could never permit himself to love Mara, that such a closeness and commitment from him would inevitably put her in danger. And now, he'd reneged on that determination. And sure enough, like all the others, his actions or inactions had put her in deadly danger. He felt a flicker in her emotions, mixing with the fear and dread rising chokingly from within him. And suddenly, her head breached the surface.
Got it,
she gasped. He had her moving before the second word was even out of her mouth, pulling her toward him with all the speed he could manage. He flipped her over the railing and lowered her flat on her stomach on the ledge, stretching himself protectively down on top of her as she landed. How soon? He asked, reaching out to the force to try to create a low-level shield that could provide at least a minimal barrier against the impending explosion.
Could be any time,
Mara answered, her voice muffled by the rock wall she was facing.
And by the way, just for future reference, don't you ever not care for someone just because you're afraid they might get hurt in the process. Especially not me. You got that?
Luke grimaced in embarrassment. You weren't supposed to hear that. Behind him, he heard the sudden crack and surging of water as the transparasteel wall collapsed. And with a brilliant flash, he could see even with his eyes squeezed shut, the generator blew up. The sound of the blast itself was almost muffled, but the roar of the wave that slammed over them more than made up for it. The water surged and roiled all around them, effortlessly picking them up and slamming them back and forth between the wall, the ledge, and the railing. Luke held grimly on Mara, wishing belatedly he'd thought to tie R2 down somehow. And then, as suddenly as it had struck, the swirling water fell away, leaving them bruised and drenched, but otherwise unharmed. Shaking the water out of his eyes, Luke pushed himself up on one arm and looked out into the chamber and caught his breath. Only one of the room's glow panels had survived the explosion, but by its dim light, he could see that the water level was rapidly going down. Mara, look! It worked!
I'll be kisseled, she said, spitting out some water. Now what? We jump in and follow the flow?
Luke leaned over the railing, trying to see the exit tunnel. If it wasn't still full to the ceiling... But it was. It's not quite that simple, he told Mara. The flow should carry us back into the caverns, all right. But there's still the matter of getting through the tunnel and underground room.
Why don't we just wait until the level goes down far enough?
We can't, Luke said.
I don't know why. Jedi hunch, Mara said. Then we're back to hibernation trances. How fast can you put me in one?
Pretty fast, he told her. Take a few deep breaths and tell me what phrase you want me to use to snap you out of it.
A phrase? Right,
she said, inhaling deeply, a strangely cautious mood touching her mind.
Okay, see if you can handle this one.
She told him, and he smiled. Got it, he said, and stretched out with the force. A minute later, she was fast asleep in his arms. You go first, R2, Luke told the droid, lifting him up with the force and easing him over the railing. We'll be right behind you. The droid warbled, and then he was in the water, his dome bobbing above the waves as he was swept toward the tunnel. Wrapping his arms protectively around Mara, Luke jumped in behind him. The current grabbed them, pushing them along behind the bobbing droid as Luke struggled to keep their heads above water. The wall and the top of the tunnel archway loomed ahead, and just before they reached it, Luke took a deep breath and pulled them both under the surface. The rest of the trip was a blur of dizzying speed, continual buffeting of the water, near collisions with smooth walls and rough stone, aching eyes and lungs. Through his half-trance, Luke was vaguely aware of where they left the tunnel and entered the underground room, was more sharply aware of where they slammed through the newly enlarged gap in the wall and the protective cortosis orb barrier as the turbulence threw them back and forth against the rock. The torrent dragged them, twisting and turning through the caverns and tunnels they'd so laboriously picked their way through days earlier with Child of Winds and the Quamja. Dimly, through his slow asphyxiation, Luke decided it was just as well that they'd cut away so many of the stalactites and stalagmites that would have been in their way. Abruptly, he snapped awake. Half submerged in water,
his head and chest resting precariously on a slimy boulder. R2's frantic twittering in his ears.
"Okay, right," he managed, shaking his head to clear it,
and suddenly stiffened. Mara was gone. He shook his head again, digging out his glow rod with numb, half-frozen fingers as he scrabbled around looking for footing. He found it immediately. The water he was in turned out to be only waist high. He fumbled the glow rod out at last and flicked it on. He was standing in a pool just off the edge of the last of the underground rivers he and Mara had passed during their trip through the caverns. 5 meters to his left, the torrent that had brought them here had vanished, leaving only the river rippling its sedate way along. And 2 meters to his right, bobbing gently in the pool as she floated beside the craggy rock, was Mara. Her eyes closed, her arms and legs limp, as if in death. The precise image he'd seen of her in that Jedi vision on Tirfon. And then he was at her side, raising her head out of the water, gazing at her face in sudden fear. If the trance hadn't kept her alive, if she'd struck something hard enough to kill her after he'd lost his grip on her. Behind him, R2 whistled impatiently. "Right," Luke agreed, cutting off his sudden panic. All he had to do to bring her out of it was speak the key phrase she'd chosen. The phrase she'd wondered aloud if he could handle. Almost as if she was afraid he couldn't. He took a deep breath. "I love you, Mara." Her eyes blinked open, blinked again as she chased the water from them.
"Hi,"
she said, breathing heavily as she grabbed his arm and maneuvered herself upright.
"I see we made it."
"Yes," Luke said, taking her in his arms and holding her tightly, his tension and fear evaporating into a mist of utter calm and relief. The vision had been passed, and Mara had survived it. And they were together again, forever.
"Yes," Mara murmured. "Forever."
They loosened their grips on each other, just slightly, and standing together in the cold water, their lips came together in a kiss. It seemed like a long time before Mara gently pulled away from the embrace.
"Not to put a damper on this," she said, "but we're both shivering, and we're still a long way from home. Where are we, anyway?"
"Back at our underground river," Luke told her, reluctantly bringing his mind back to practical matters.
"Ah."
She peered toward the stream.
"What happened to our personal flood?"
"It seems to have ended," Luke said. "Either we drained the lake completely."
"Which is real unlikely."
"Right," Luke said. "Or else it's gotten stopped up again somehow."
"Probably more of the chamber wall collapsed," Mara said,
reaching up to push back some of the hair that had gotten plastered across her cheek.
"Or else it's jammed up with what's left of the cloning equipment."
Luke nodded, helping her push the rest of her hair back out of the way. "Good thing we didn't wait any longer to make our exit."
"Sure is," Mara agreed. "Handy things, those Jedi hunches. You'll have to teach me how to do those."
"We'll work on it," Luke promised, wading toward the edge of the pond. "I think the Quamja said this river emptied out into a small waterfall."
"Sounds good,"
Mara said.
"Let's go find it."
Another wave of skip-ray blast boats shot past, pelting the Tyrannic with laser fire. Behind them, two of the Ashori war cruisers had gotten inside the kill zone and were scattering a dazzling pattern of more powerful turbo laser blasts across the ridgeline.
"Two more starboard turbo lasers knocked out,"
the fire control officer called tensely.
"Forward ridgeline has been breached. Crews are sealing it off."
"Acknowledged,"
Nalgal said, hearing his voice trembling with a frustrated and wholly impotent fury. It was unthinkable. Unthinkable that a fleet of 3 Imperial Star Destroyers should find themselves fighting for their survival against such a pitiful ragtag of aliens and alien lovers.
But that was exactly what they were doing. There were just too many of them to keep track of. Too many of them to fight. And with all his pride in his ship, and his crew, and his empire, Nalgol was realist enough to know when the fight had become hopeless.
Signal to the Obliterator and Iron Hand,
he ordered between clenched teeth.
Pull back and withdraw. Repeat, pull back and withdraw.
Acknowledged, Captain,
the comm officer replied.
What heading, sir?
The helmsman called.
A short jump in any direction.
Nargol glared out the viewport.
And after that, set course directly for Bastion. Grand Admiral Thrawn needs to hear about this.
And he would indeed hear about it, Nargol promised himself silently. Yes, indeed. He would hear all about it. The waterfall exit was considerably less cozy than Luke had expected it to be, the hole possibly having been enlarged by the flood that had just forced its way through. There weren't any footholds right at the mouth, but in the dim starlight, Mara spotted a likely ledge about 5 meters to the left. Using the Force, Luke lifted first Mara, then R2 across the gap. Then, a bit more tentatively, Mara brought him across to join them.
Any idea what side of the fortress we're on?
She asked, looking around the darkened landscape.
Or how much longer we've got until dawn?
No to both questions, Luke said, stretching out with the Force. There was no danger nearby that he could detect. Probably the far side, and probably not more than a couple more hours.
We'd better use the time to get undercover,
she suggested, peering up at the cliff above them.
We don't want to be out in the open when Park sends out his search parties.
I just hope he doesn't find the ship we borrowed, Luke said. Aside from giving him back his quick access to Bastion, it would lose us our only way of getting out of here together.
Well, if he does, you and R2 will just have to take your X-Wing and go for help,
Mara said. You mean you and R2 will go, Luke said firmly. I mean that, Mara. No argument this time.
Jedi! Skywalker!
Luke looked up. Fluttering to a landing on a boulder above them were a dozen dark shapes. And the tone and mind of one of them seemed very familiar. Yes, he said. Is that you, Hunter of Winds?
Rawr! It is I,
the Quan Kuei confirmed.
My son, child of winds, informed all nearby nestings of your deeds this night. We have been watching for your return.
Thank you, Luke said. We very much appreciate your efforts. Can you show us to a place of shelter nearby? We need to hide from those in the high tower until we can make our way back to our ship. Hunter of Winds ruffled his wings.
No need for shelter, Jedi Skywalker,
he said.
We will carry you to your flying machine, as my son and his companions did earlier this night.
Luke frowned. After Hunter of Wind's quick and cavalier dismissal of him and his mission when he and R2 first landed, such magnanimity seemed suspiciously out of character. You're very kind, he said carefully. May I ask why you're willing to take such risks for us? Hunter of Winds ruffled his wings.
I have spoken to the bargainer for this nesting of the Quam Jar,
he said.
Eater of Fire Creepers has agreed to release you from your promise to help us against the Threateners, provided you leave our world at once.
Luke felt his face warming. In other words, our presence here has become a liability to you?
Child of Winds has said the Threateners will not harm us if we do not bother them.
Hunter of Winds said gruffly.
It is to that end that we wish you to leave.
Nothing like being appreciated, is there?
Mara muttered. It's all right, Luke said, touching her hand and her mind soothingly, reminding her that embarrassment, and even veiled insult aside, this was in fact the result she herself had said she wanted. Park and the Chiss would now be left alone, unharassed by the Quam Ja and Quam Kwei, and free to focus their full energies on their work in the unknown regions.
Fine, she said,
and Luke could feel her grudging acceptance.
But he's not Child of Winds anymore. After what he's been through, he deserves to have a name of his own.
Really?
Hunter of Winds said, giving her a long, thoughtful look.
And what name do you suggest for him?
The one he's earned, she said softly. Friend of Jedi.
Hunter of Winds ruffled his wings again.
I will consider it. But now, let us depart. The night grows old, and you will wish to be gone before the sunrise.
I look forward to it, Flynn was saying, as Card rounded the archway onto the Relentless's bridge.
Yes,
Pelion said.
So will I.
The Admiral turned as Card stepped up beside him.
You're late,
Pelion said mildly. I was watching the turbolift, Card explained. I thought Flynn and his associates might try to bring a squad of stormtroopers in on their side of the dispute.
They might have at that,
Pelion said.
Thank you.
No problem, Card assured him, looking around the bridge. The Major Tierce clone was lying unmoving on the deck. Shada was across with the other two Mistral. The con man Flynn was waiting with studied unconcern just back of the command walkway, and Moff Deesra was a little off to one side, standing as aloof and cold and dignified as a man facing his own destruction could manage. Besides, it doesn't look like my presence was really needed.
Not for this part, no,
Pelion agreed.
Your friend Shada is quite impressive. I don't suppose she'd be interested in a job.
Well, she is looking for a higher cause to serve, Card told him. However, to be perfectly honest, I don't think the Empire is it. Pelion nodded.
Perhaps we can change that.
Admiral Pelion, a voice called from the crew pits. I have General Bel Iblis for you now.
Thank you.
Pelion looked to Card.
Don't run off. I'll want to speak with you later.
Certainly. The Admiral headed down the command walkway, passing Flynn without a second glance. Throwing one last look at Deesra, Card crossed to where Shada and the other young Mistral were helping the older woman to a sitting position. How is she? He asked.
Not as bad as we thought, Shada said,
probing gingerly into the scorched tunic.
She was able to twist almost out of the way of the shot.
Well-honed reflexes, Card nodded. Once a Mistral, always a Mistral, I suppose. The older woman eyed him balefully.
You're very well informed, she growled.
About a great many things, Card agreed calmly. Among them, the fact that Shada seems to have earned your displeasure somehow.
And what? You think this makes up for it?
The woman snapped contemptuously. Doesn't it? Card countered. If she hadn't stopped tears when she did, you two would have been the next to die after Pelion. You are the most immediate threats to him. She snorted.
I'm a Mistral, Talon Card. My life is gladly given in the service of my people.
Really? Card looked at the younger woman. Do you also consider your life not worth a little gratitude?
Leave Karoli out of this, the older woman bit out. She has nothing to say on the matter.
Ah, Card said. Soldiers with no voice or opinion. Remarkably similar to the philosophy of the Imperial Stormtroopers.
Karoli allowed Shada to escape once before, the woman said, glowering at her. She's fortunate she wasn't punished herself for that.
Oh, yes, Card murmured. How very lucky for her.
The woman's eyes flashed.
If you've quite finished...
I haven't, Card said. Clearly you don't consider Mistral lives worth anything. What about Mistral reputations?
Her eyes narrowed.
What do you mean?
Card waved toward Flim.
You're about to make an alliance with these people. You're about to be taken in by nothing more than slick talk, whipped air, and a dirt-level fringe conman. And don't bother denying it. A member of the Eleven doesn't travel off Emberlyn just for the exercise.
The woman's eyes drifted away from his gaze.
The issue was still under discussion, she muttered.
Glad to hear it, Card said. Because if even your reputation doesn't matter to you, consider what binding the Mistral to a vengeful man like Moff Disra would have meant. How long do you think it would have been before you became his private death commandos?
That would never have happened,
Karoli put in emphatically.
We would never sink that low. Not even under a treaty.
Shada stirred.
What was it you tried to stop me from doing on the Resonant Complex roof?
She asked quietly.
That was different,
Karoli protested. Shada shook her head.
No. Condoning and cooperating with murder is no different from committing it yourself.
She's right, Card said. And once you started down that road, it would have meant the end of the Mistral. You'd have burned your sky arches behind you, with every other potential client. And when Flim's soap bubble collapsed, as it inevitably would have, there would have been nothing left out there anymore for you. And with the end of the Mistral would have come a final end to Emberlyn.
He crossed his arms and waited. And after a few seconds, the older woman grimaced.
What is it you want?
I want the Mistral Hunter teams called off Shada, he said. Whatever her alleged crime against you, it's to be forgiven, and the death mark lifted.
The woman's mouth twisted.
You ask much.
We've given much, Card reminded her. Is it a deal?
She hesitated, then nodded reluctantly.
Very well. But she will not be reinstated into the Mistral. Not now, not ever. And Emberlyn will forever be closed to her.
She turned burning eyes up at Shada.
From now on, she is a woman without a home.
Card looked at Shada. Her face was tight, her lips pressed tightly together. But she returned his look steadily and nodded.
Fine, he said. We'll just have to see about finding her a new home.
With you?
The woman snorted.
With a smuggler and seller of information? Tell me again how low a Mistral can sink.
There was no answer to that. But fortunately, Carr didn't have to come up with one. There was a sudden bustling at his side, and then he was gently but firmly shouldered away by the medical team as they gathered around the injured woman. He stepped back out of their way, shifting his attention to the security team that had arrived at the same time. With professional efficiency, they scanned Flim and Disra for hidden weapons, put restraints on them both, and escorted them back to the aft bridge turbolift. Another group, following behind them, was carrying Tierce's body.
Card?
He turned to see Pelion walking back along the command walkway toward him.
I have to go across to the Errant Venture and speak with General Beliblis,
the Admiral said as he reached him.
But before I go, I wanted to discuss the price for the Flim and Tierce information you brought me.
Card shrugged. For once in my life, Admiral, I'm not sure what to say, he admitted. The data card was a gift to me. It seems a bit dishonest to turn around and charge you for it.
Ah.
Pelion eyed him speculatively.
A gift from those aliens whose ship scared the stuffing out of my sensor officers at Bastion?
From an associate of theirs, Card said. I'm really not at liberty to discuss the details.
I understand,
Pelion said.
Still, your ethics part, which I find laudable, incidentally, I'd like to find a way to thank you with something more concrete than just words.
I'll see what I can come up with. Card gestured toward the Star Destroyer visible out the viewport. In the meantime, may I ask what you're going over to discuss with General Bel Iblis? Pelion's eyes narrowed slightly, but then he shrugged.
It's still highly confidential, of course,
he said.
But knowing you, you'll probably know about it soon enough anyway. I'm proposing a peace treaty between the Empire and the New Republic. It's time for this long war to finally end.
Card shook his head. There are things that happen when I'm out of touch at the edges of known space, he said philosophically. For whatever it's worth, Admiral, I agree wholeheartedly with your goal. And I wish you luck.
Thank you,
Pelion said.
Feel free to leave whenever you wish, or allow your crew to take advantage of any of the Relentless's facilities if they'd like. And again, thank you.
He headed off toward the turbolift. Card watched him go, then looked back at Shada. The medical team had finished their preliminary work and were helping the injured woman onto a stretcher. Shada was watching them from a few paces away, an expression of private pain on her face, like someone watching the last member of her family leaving home. And then, unbidden, an idea drifted into Card's mind. Something larger than herself, she told Cardass. Something she could hold on to and serve and believe in. Something more honorable and noble than the life of a fringe smuggler. Something that would make a difference.
Admiral Pelion, he called, hurrying back to the aft bridge. Admiral?
Pelion had paused at the open door of the turbolift.
Yes.
Let me ride over with you to the Errant Venture, if I may, Card said, stepping to his side. I have a modest proposal I'd like to make to you. Luke's final fear was that the Hand of Thrawn's weapons towers would spot them as they lifted their borrowed ship out of its hiding place, forcing their departure from the Nirwan surface to be yet another mad race against death. But the Chiss were apparently still dealing with the aftermath of the hangar destruction, with no attention left to turn outward. And so they lifted out into space without challenge. And with Mara's touch on the hyperdrive lever, the stars became star lines and faded into the mottling of hyperspace. And at long last, they were on their way home.
Next stop, Coruscant,
Luke said with a sigh, leaning back tiredly in the co-pilot's seat.
Next stop, the nearest New Republic base, or one of Card's outposts, Mara corrected. I don't know about you, but I want a shower, some clean clothes, and something besides ration bars to eat.
Point taken, Luke said. You always were the practical one, weren't you?
And you always were the idealistic one, she said. Must be why we work so well together.
Speaking of practical, remember back in the cloning chamber when R2 went all squeaky?
You mean just before the Sentinel droid showed up?
Right. We never did find out what was tying him in knots that way.
Well, let's find out now, Luke said, levering himself out of his seat and making his way back to the droid alcove where they'd plugged R2 into the ship's computer.
Okay, R2. You heard the lady. What was it about the unknown regions data that got you all excited?
R2 warbled, his words appearing on the computer display. He says it didn't have anything to do with the unknown regions, Luke reported. Which he says he didn't get any more than a general overview of, by the way.
I didn't think he'd gotten very much,
Mara said regretfully.
He wasn't connected to the computer nearly long enough to download everything.
Well, we're sure not going to go back and get the rest now, Luke said, skimming down the scrolling words. But there was something he stumbled across in one of the other records. Mara must have picked up his sudden shock.
What is it?
She asked sharply.
I don't believe it,
he murmured, still reading. Mara, he found it.
He found it. Wonderful. Found what?
What else? Luke looked up at her. Thrawn's copy of the Ka'amas document.
Chapter 43.
15 days later, in the secondary command room of the Imperial Star Destroyer Chimera, the peace accords between the Empire and New Republic were signed.
I still say you should have been the one over there,
Han groused as he and Leia watched from the back of the room, while Pelion and Gaversim performed the ceremony amid the crowd of assembled dignitaries.
You did way more on this than he did.
It's all right, Han,
Leia said, surreptitiously wiping a tear from the corner of her eye.
Peace. After all the years, after all the sacrifice and destruction and death, finally they had peace.
Yeah?
Han countered suspiciously.
Then how come you're crying?
She smiled at him.
Memories, she said. Just memories.
He found her hand, took it comfortingly.
Alderaan?
He asked quietly.
Alderaan, the Death Stars.
She squeezed his hand.
You?
Nice to know I'm in the top three anyway, he said, looking around the room. Speaking of old memories, where's Lando? I thought he was going to be here.
He changed his mind, Leia said. I guess Tendra wasn't very happy with him heading out to Bastion with you without at least telling her about it. He's taken her art shopping on Celanon to make it up to her.
Han shook his head. Strong women, he said mock sadly. I'll get you every time.
Watch that,
Leia warned, digging her elbow into his side.
You've always liked strong women. Admit it.
Well, not always, Han said. Ow! Okay. I like strong women.
What's this about strong women?
Card's voice asked from Han's other side.
Just a friendly family discussion,
Han assured him.
Good to see you again, Card. How come you're not over there with the rest of the high-class people?
Probably the same reason you're not, Card said. I don't exactly fit in with that sort of group.
That'll change soon,
Leia assured him.
Particularly now that you're respectable and all. How in the worlds did you talk Gaversim and Bell Iblis into this joint intelligence service idea?
The same way I talked Pelion into it, actually, Card said. I simply pointed out that the key to a stable and calm peace is both sides knowing the other isn't plotting some kind of move against them. Bastion doesn't trust your intelligence network, and Coruscant definitely doesn't trust theirs.
He shrugged.
Enter a neutral third party. Us, who straddle both regimes and are already equipped to gather and assemble information. We'll simply now be supplying it to your two governments instead of to private buyers.
It could work, I suppose,
Han agreed cautiously.
The Bureau of Ships and Services has been operating independently for years without going political, either under the Empire or the New Republic. You might be able to pull it off.
I like the fact that we'll be getting the same information about our own systems that you'll be giving Bastion,
Leia said.
It'll supplement the data the observers are sending us and help us keep track of what the various system and sector governments are up to. That should help us spot problems before they get too big to deal with.
Yeah,
Han said darkly.
Just because the Kaamas document Luke and Mara brought back slowed down a lot of the brush wars doesn't mean they won't start up again.